politicians. Big businesses and some of the richest people in the world have sheltered their wealth in offshore tax havens. That's according to the Paradise Papers, millions of files that were leaked to the press and show where the world's wealthy are sheltering their money. Reports say the papers reveal previously unknown transactions by the Queen of England, corporate giants like Nike and Apple, even key people in President Trump's circle. John Swain is a senior reporter for The Guardian. He's been covering the Paradise Papers. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, it's this whole world that people under a certain income level would have no reason to have contact with. Can you tell us just a little bit about what kind of institutions are at the center of these leaked documents?
Well, as you say, this is a mixture of big corporations, of ultra-wealthy individuals, and banks and other institutions who are finding the newest and cleverest ways to move money offshore, to move money away from the IRS and away from U.S. tax liability.
And a lot of names are being attached to this. As I understand it, it doesn't necessarily mean if my name came up in this, and it won't, but if it did, it wouldn't mean I had done anything illegal necessarily. Is that right?
That's right. In the vast majority of cases, this is the system. This is not illegal. This is the system that's been set up and that is being used, and some might argue exploited, by people who have the best and most expensive advisors and lawyers who find loopholes and weaknesses and new systems within the international banking and tax system to move their clients' money into the absolutely most efficient, tax-efficient location.
So it might be to avoid taxes. It might be because someone doesn't want their name associated with a business. Is it potentially a haven for money laundering as well?
Well, we know that these places often are. You know, many of the people we've written about in this project are obviously not involved in anything like that. They are just seeking to sort of maximize returns. But the secrecy that you mentioned that exists in some tax havens where filings are not made public, annual accounts do not need to be filed to the government authorities, and no kind of registration or disclosure paperwork is required, means that it's very easily exploited by people who are involved in criminal wrongdoing to hide the paper trail behind them. And that's why a lot of campaigners think that these tax havens are just incredibly bad for law enforcement around the world. They allow people to just operate in this sort of shadow system.
Talking to John Swain from The Guardian, looking at the Paradise Papers leaked documents about banking institutions, money being hidden in these institutions by corporations and individuals. And John, you've been covering people in the American political system whose name has come up in ways more or less benign. Let's start in the U.S. cabinet. We've seen names like Secretary of State Rex Tillerson mentioned in some of the leaked files. How is he coming up there?
So Rex Tillerson is mentioned in a couple of documents in the files. He, as many people know, worked at ExxonMobil, the oil and gas sort of giant corporation, for many years, ending up as the CEO. And one entity that he appears in the files in relation to is a gas drilling venture that Exxon undertook in Yemen in the 1990s, when he was actually head of the Yemen division. And this was a controversial venture that they pursued in Yemen and eventually were sort of driven out of the country by the government. Rex Tillerson's name is attached to this offshore investment vehicle that Exxon used, we think, to sort of avoid U.S. tax, perhaps, and to ensure confidentiality of their documents. He appears in a couple of documents in relation to that venture.
And then Steven Mnuchin, the U.S. Treasury Secretary.
So before
and
he joined the
government, bank, I should say, yeah.
That's right. So Steven Mnuchin, before he joined the Trump administration, he was the deputy chairman of a bank named Citibank, and his name doesn't appear itself in the documents, but his bank does. And his bank, until recently, helped high-net-worth individuals, as they say, wealthy people, organize their ownership of private jets offshore, specifically to avoid things like sales taxes and charges that sometimes are applied by some U.S. states, by some European countries. Instead, if you register these jets in offshore tax havens, you can sometimes avoid those charges, which obviously, if you're buying a jet for, say, $50 million, add up to quite a lot of money.
And then before we leave the cabinet, Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, he's the one who's gotten the most attention for the Paradise Papers. So what have we learned about him?
What we learned from the files with Wilbur Ross is that he's actually involved in a business venture with Russian President Vladimir Putin's son-in-law. Wilbur Ross has a stake in a shipping company named Navigator. Navigator does a lot of business with a Russian gas company named Seabur. And Seabur is co-owned by Kirill Shamalov, who is Putin's son-in-law. And this wasn't known before, and Secretary Ross has actually retained this stake since joining the government. He's continued to essentially to make money from this shipping company, which is operating in Russia with not only Vladimir Putin's son-in-law, but a couple of people who are actually under U.S. sanctions.
Is it a concern that he didn't disclose this, or did he disclose this, and we're just finding out about it?
So he did disclose in his original paperwork that he held a stake in a company named Navigator. What he didn't make perfectly clear, and what some ethics experts say is troubling, is that he was holding on to that. He declared that he was holding on to these quite obscurely named investment vehicles in places like the Cayman Islands. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, these actually held investments in the shipping company. And so that's what's taken people, I think, mostly by surprise, that he's actually retained these interests, despite being in government, A, in a position of authority over industry, and obviously shipping is a very important part of industry, and B, retaining this link to influential Russians when he's part of a government imposing sanctions on some of them.
You also looked into people who are big political donors, some on the Republican side, at least one on the Democratic side. I want to throw some names at you that you've reported on, not all household names in this case. Warren Stevens, can you talk about him and what we've learned about him from these papers?
Sure. Warren Stevens is an Arkansas-based finance guy, essentially, and although he's not a household name, he has been a very big backer of Republican candidates over the years. And what we learned is he's actually the hidden co-owner of a payday lending firm, one of these companies that gives people short-term loans, often with very high interest rates. And why that's particularly interesting is Mr. Stevens has backed politicians who are trying to dismantle a government regulator of that industry. There's this thing called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and it's actually suing Warren Stevens' payday lender. And we've never known that he was a co-owner of this company. He's been funding politicians who are trying to kind of undermine and bring down this regulator while being involved in the industry himself.
So this is something one could do with these offshore accounts, be a secret owner of a public business.
That's right. You can, in many different jurisdictions, have ownership stakes in companies and ensure that those companies are just not publicly disclosed. There are some jurisdictions, you know, these jurisdictions do vary somewhat between, in terms of what they disclose to the public and to the press, but some of them ensure almost total secrecy. You just cannot get hold of any documents that reveal the ownership of a company. And if you've got a payday lending company or another business that may operate in the United States, it may be owned by a series of more opaque companies which end offshore.
And then Robert Mercer, a little better known. He has close ties to Steve Bannon. He was involved in President Trump's campaign indirectly in many ways. And he's very wealthy, and his name has come up in regard to these papers. What have we learned about Robert Mercer?
So Robert Mercer's family has a family foundation which it uses to make philanthropic donations. Some of these are to kind of conservative-leaning research groups, and some of those research groups have funded Stephen Bannon, who, as many people will know, worked in Donald Trump's White House until recently. And what we found in these documents is that Robert Mercer's foundation is using a Bermuda-based investment vehicle to avoid tax on huge investment profits that he's making from hedge fund investments. So what it means is, in simple terms, his foundation saves money. It doesn't pay tax on millions of dollars of investment profits that it makes. And that allows it to give more money to people like Stephen Bannon, who can then use it to make political films, political books, which are critical of Hillary Clinton, and essentially use this offshore-funded vehicle to exert political influence.
And do I have this right? This foundation of the Mercer family, a lot of the hedge fund it's buying into is the hedge fund operated and owned by Robert Mercer. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. It gets more complicated because, yeah, he himself owns the hedge fund. It's named Renaissance Technologies. And as you say, he uses his own private foundation to invest in his own hedge fund, and then when it makes money, he avoids tax on the returns. So as you suggest, you know, that is a kind of strange, unusual setup, and to a lot of people, I think it's slightly troubling.
Democrats are not completely omitted here either. You talked about Democratic donor James Simons in your reporting. What can you tell us about him?
That's right. Well, James Simons is actually the founder of Renaissance Technologies, Robert Mercer's hedge fund. But James Simons is more of a Democrat. He has donated to lots of Democrats over the years and put actually $11 million behind Hillary Clinton's campaign and sort of supporting groups to her campaign in 2016. And what we found about James Simons was that for several decades, he's actually been building a huge trust fund on Bermuda, which is this Atlantic tax haven. And the trust fund he's built there is worth at least $8 billion. That's billion with a B. And this was just unknown to people before now. He has sort of secretly built this up. And we got hold of documents in this leak that give a lot of detail about the trust fund and how it makes its money and how it distributes money.
Do we have a sense of how much money governments in the United States and elsewhere are not getting because of the use of these tax havens?
Well, it's incredibly difficult to know just purely because of the lack of transparency that we discussed earlier. But certainly campaigners argue that this is in the hundreds of billions of dollars of each year worldwide being lost in terms of tax revenues that might have otherwise be taken in.
And is there any kind of pressure now on leaders in countries that are losing out on this to try to bring that money back, close loopholes, that kind of thing?
There's a little bit of pressure. I think you see liberals on the Democratic side and independents like Bernie Sanders calling for inquiries to be set up and for action to be taken to dissuade and deter U.S. individuals and corporations from moving money offshore. There's Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island and a Representative Lloyd Doggett of Texas. Each Congress, for the last few years, they actually have introduced a bill which would try to tackle some of these issues, to close the loopholes and to stop some of these strategies. But actually, they've attracted very little support for this bill every time they've introduced it. And they're trying again now, and they're saying that, you know, these disclosures show just how much that is needed. And I guess it's going to be interesting to see whether they'll gather any more support than they have done before.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's John Swain, senior reporter for The Guardian. He joined us to take a closer look at the Paradise Papers and which Americans in politics have been connected to them.